afternoon. Welcome to Chino Afternoon for Tuesday, the 17th of November, the year 2015. Jeff Brown is here today. We'll be talking to Carol Stauffer and Sandy Fiskus at the Chino FASD Diagnostic Clinic. We'll get a preview of Scott Carley's Tuesday night Chino World Affairs Council presentation about Costa Rica. We'll highlight partnerships for families and children with guest Nikki Love. Rena Sims will be here to highlight this year's St. Vincent de Paul Thanksgiving Day baskets. We'll learn about salt cave therapy with guest Claire Bain and Flindran Middle School Principal Jim Thompson will be here to talk about the upcoming event, Dads and Donuts, Night Rider's Almanac, Burnout, and more on a Juno afternoon. Well, the forecast for today is a winter storm warning until 4 p.m. tomorrow.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A tribal citizen science network in Alaska is being touted as a model for tracking climate change in the Arctic. As KMBA's Jocelyn Estes reports, the eight-nation Arctic Council plans to expand the Local Environmental Observer, or LEO, network to other Arctic nations.
Mike Brubaker is the director of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium's Center for Climate and Health. He says Alaska's 120 local environmental observers bring decades of experience living in their communities and knowledge passed down from elders as they document the rare, unusual, or unprecedented in their area. Anything that could affect food or water security or community health, Brubaker says topic experts at universities and agencies also add their perspective and answer questions.
We depend heavily upon those members of the LEO network who are maybe not on the observation side, but they're in sort of the ground truthing and providing technical assistance side.
Program assistant Mary Mullen says the observers are not paid by the LEO network. Instead, she says their motivation is to get the information out and get answers to better prepare for the future.
This is our home. This is our community. You always want your home to be there. And so they care about it. They need that food to be there. They need those plants to be there. So for their health, their safety, it's important from old to young.
The Arctic Council, which is made up of representatives of the eight Arctic nations, has adopted a recommendation to create a circumpolar local environmental observer network using Alaska's LEO as a model. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Pine Ridge in South Dakota has a new bank, financial literacy hub, and art space, and it's all on wheels. Rolling Res Arts is a mobile creative space, business training center, and bank all in one bus. It's part of efforts to help spur art-based economic development. Charles Michael Ray has more.
The Rolling Res Arts bus stems from a marketing study done by First Peoples Fund on the needs within the communities of Pine Ridge. The study found art is rooted deeply in Lakota culture as an inherent part of the community. But artists on Pine Ridge often lack a place to work and lack access to a bank. Brandy McDonald is with First Peoples Fund. It's one of the organizations behind this effort.
It provides a space, it provides access to capital, it provides these resources, and it connects people in the community with mentors, with culture bearers at the same time, which is beautiful to think about, is that it's able to kind of do that and continue to move into the space that the people that have identified those needs live.
The bus has a designated banking area and can be configured as a classroom, art space, or even a computer lab. One goal is to build an economy around the arts and culture on Pine Ridge. But Jeremy Staub with First Peoples Fund says this can't happen without access to a bank.
We're thinking about, you know, asset building in the long term. You know, how do we get people comfortable with banking? And traditionally, there may be some mistrust in banking. And so how do we rebuild those relationships and instruct people on how to balance their bank accounts and how to utilize credit? And so the mobile unit will allow them to have access, or at least extend Lakota Fund Credit Union's services to all those areas.
The bus is wrapped in images of buffalo by Lakota artist Don Montalo. Organizers say the next phase of the project is a permanent building in Kyle called the Oglala Lakota Art Space that includes a community studio, meeting space, classrooms, and gallery to serve the needs of local artists. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation.
with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at NARF.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes past here, and you are tuned to listener supported public broadcasting in Juneau, KCUO, and KRNN FM. In the studio with me now is psychologist Doug Wesson, coordinator Carol Stauffer, and parent navigator Sandy Fiskus, here to talk about the Juneau FASD Clinic. Thank you for coming down the station, everybody.
Thank you for inviting us.
So, what is FASD?
FASD stands for Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder. And it is a result of children being born to moms who drank alcohol during their pregnancy.
And you were saying earlier, the general idea is no alcohol at all.
Right. The American Academy of Pediatrics just last month put out a statement that says no alcohol during pregnancy should be considered safe.
How pervasive is FASD?
We don't know exactly how pervasive it is because there's lots of folks with an FASD who haven't been diagnosed. We don't have nearly enough people who are doing diagnosis or nearly enough teams, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder teams. So we're really lucky here in Alaska to have, we have five or six teams.
Doug, how do you make the diagnosis?
It's a medical diagnosis, but there's a team that meets. I'm part of that team. I'm a school psychologist by training, but started working with a FASD team about 10 years ago. So we have speech pathologists, occupational therapists, also physical therapists, and then a physician. So we look at different facial features, and then the part that I get involved with is the brain functioning of the person. So are they, do they have any type of impairments, cognitive impairments, working memory, or what we call executive functioning, which involves planning, any speech or language disorders. And through that, with all the different diagnoses from the different specialists on the team, we try to figure out the severity on a spectrum scale of how severe that is, and then use that towards making our diagnosis. So we look at, one, do we have documentation that the mother drank during pregnancy, any sort of brain impairment, and then the physicians look at growth charts to see if there's any growth abnormalities or stunted growth, and then also facial features that sometimes are characteristic of children that have been exposed to alcohol.
Once you made the diagnosis, what then?
Once we make the diagnosis, then we meet as a team. We follow up with the parents or caregivers. Sometimes we do adults, sometimes adolescents we may talk directly to them, and we provide them what the diagnosis was and how we came to that. And then we also list some recommendations of different things that they can do towards getting help, navigating around the community, possible things that schools can do to help these students out, or different things in the community in order to help them just navigate through life and help them out with their disability.
We're talking about the diagnostic clinic. Is this the first time that this has happened in Juneau?
We had a diagnostic clinic. I think it started back in 2005.
Yeah.
And was on that team for about 5 years. And I retired from the school district, and I left the team, and another psychologist filled in my spot. And then the team dissolved in, was it 2010, 11? And then just got it started back up again last spring. REACH started to sponsor the team, and so they're our agency sponsor.
Carol, could you describe the clinic, please?
Can you be more specific? I mean, what we do?
It's located in the REACH building.
Yes, located in the REACH building, and all of our different professionals work in their own places, and so they might do an evaluation there, or they might do an evaluation at REACH. It just depends on where they are. But then the team will come together after all those evaluations and discuss to come up with a diagnosis.
And you have to be referred to the clinic?
Yes, but you could be it could be a self-referral, yeah, or a parent referral. We get a lot of referrals from case managers, doctors, social service workers, that kind of thing.
How do people utilize the clinic? Jenny?
May I answer that? If you know of someone who you think might be having problems in any area, whether it's legal or educational or just getting along with family members, and you have an idea that that person's biological mother drank while she was pregnant, you might have in the back of your mind that this child might have, or adult, might have a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And at that point, anybody can make a referral to the clinic. Our clinic is at REACH, which is at 213 3rd Street, downtown, and our phone number is 907-796-7264. You can just make a call, and we will get the referral information to you. After a referral's made, Carol calls me, and I meet with that person. And we meet, or I meet with the family, whoever is the guardian, or if the person's over 18 with them. We meet, and we talk about all the person's history, medical and educational, and we ask for records from all of the places that person has been that has any relationship to education or medical background. And once we get all those forms, Dr. Carolyn Brown right now will put all those forms together and make a report so that everybody on the team can read all that background information about that person. And then we set up a time for the clinic to meet and all the people who are on the team to get together and talk about that information. And then we put together a report and recommendations, which are sent to whoever the client would like us to send them to, their physician or their school district or their relatives, whoever they would like to have that information.
Why is having a clinic important?
It's really important to have a clinic because it can change people's life for the better. Once a person is diagnosed, they can, they're eligible for services that they might not be eligible before. We know what is causing their behavior, or we have a good idea what's causing their behavior. And the therapy for people with a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is different than therapy for people who have a lot of similar disorders. It's very difficult to change the person. You have to look at changing the environment. And that is not something that caregivers or therapists normally think about. So it's really a lifesaver for people who have this disorder.
And said earlier that about 1 in 100 people have it?
That's correct. Yes, we're pretty sure there's more than that. But because we don't diagnose very many people, our clinic meets once a month and we diagnose 2 people a month. So that's only 24 people a year if we meet every month. So there's no way that we could actually know how many people have a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. But that's what we think. We know it's much higher in prisons, and we know it's much higher among children who are put up for adoption.
And the sad thing is, it's 100% preventable.
It is 100% preventable. That is true.
You just can't drink.
You just can't drink alcohol when you're pregnant.
Not one drop, they say.
Not one drop. And just because you have a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder does not necessarily mean your children will, as long as you don't drink when you're pregnant.
I'd like to thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you very much.
Talking about FASD. Can you give the contact information for him?
Yes, you can contact us at REACH. It's at 213 3rd Street, and the phone number is 796-7264. We do have an email, and that is junofasd@reachak.org.
Is there anything you'd like to mention that I might have forgotten to ask?
We just appreciate the chance to come on today to get the word out that the clinic is operating in Juneau, and hope that if there's anybody out there wondering about that they get in touch with us, and hopefully we could provide some services for them.
Thank you.
Thanks for
coming. Thank you very much.
60 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Next guest in the studio, Jim Clark and Scott Carley here to talk about Scott Carley's presentation tonight downstairs in the KFUO building on Costa Rica. Jim, Scott, welcome to the station.
Well, Juno World Affairs Council is delighted to have Scott talking to us tonight. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization designed to bring people to Juno to speak on international issues. And of course, the nice thing about Scott is he's from Juno, so we're really looking forward to his talk tonight.
Scott, you're talking about Costa Rica.
Yeah, so I was there in May, this past May, for about 3 weeks. It was kind of a study research tour that I did with the University of Southern Mississippi. We went down there as a group, and we traveled all over the country and heard lectures and met with people. And we were doing our own individual research while we were down there. My research happened to be on the impact of tourism on the indigenous population. So I was able to visit four indigenous territories down there, meet with people, do some interviews, and really see how this boom of tourism in Costa Rica is affecting their culture and affecting them, how they're trying to participate in the tourist economy, those sorts of things.
What are some of the major impacts that tourism has had?
Well, it hasn't had a great impact right now, I would say. You know, a lot of my findings are kind of preliminary, and that's what I'll be presenting tonight. Tourism in Costa Rica is really huge. It's about 5% of the GDP down there. But it mostly is on the coast, either the Caribbean coast to the east or the Pacific coast to the west. A lot of the indigenous population lives in the central part of the country, but they're trying to attract tourists to come in. They to give them more of a what they call an ethnotourism experience, where you can actually go and live on the territory with them. You can do homestays. You can do rainforest tours. They show you the medicinal plants that are there, those sorts of things. And so they're trying to bring in that money, you know, to their economy and to basically better their lives. It's, you know, a lot of these places are really hard to get to. So you have to be a very adventurous tourist to even make it to some of these places. It's just a lot easier to, you know, land at the airport and go to the beach. But, you know, what we did was kind of more interesting. And for the more adventurous traveler, I think that it offers a lot.
What are some of the downsides of having such a tourism where it hasn't been before?
Yeah, so there's it taxes their infrastructure, for example. There's, you know, like the roads aren't quite built up. Some of the places we went didn't have any electricity. And, you know, obviously along with all that is, you know, what do you do with, you know, how do you get clean water in there and how do you get, you know, sewage treated and those sorts of things. So some of these villages, I think, haven't really thought out the whole process of if you bring in, you know, a busload of tourists. Well, there's certain expectations, you know, they have to go to the bathroom or they have to, you know, they have to drink water and you have to cook for them and then, you know, you have to clean up and those sorts of things. So even in these homestays, it's sort of working right now, but as they try and scale up to really gain, you know, some more of that tourist money or the, you know, the tourist coming in, there are going to be issues of just taxing out the infrastructure of these villages.
What surprised you?
What surprised me the most down there? Well, for one thing, I think what is really most appealing about Costa Rica for anybody who's been there would probably agree with me is just how amazing the wildlife is, the rainforest is down there. About 25% of the country is protected in some fashion, either a national park or some sort of protected territory. And it doesn't take anything to go out into the rainforest in certain areas and see incredible wildlife. I mean, I saw wild monkeys while we were down there. I saw iguanas in the wild. We saw snakes. We saw, you know, hummingbirds. We saw the quetzal bird, which is a very famous Costa Rican bird that everybody goes down there to see. We actually saw one. It's very hard to see one. So it's just amazing how abundant the wildlife is. It's a very good counter balance to what we have up here in Alaska, where we have a lot of really fantastic rainforest up here, but it's sort of a cold rainforest, and down there it's definitely a warm rainforest.
And I imagine you got a chance to talk to the locals down there.
Yeah, we did a lot of interviewing. We talked to a lot of locals, both indigenous and sort of non-indigenous local Costa Ricans. They call themselves Ticos down there, so you hear that term Tico. That's sort of a typical Costa Rican. We really got to see both sides of the economy. We did a lot of your standard tourist things. They have a lot of things to do down there, you know, from zip lining to rainforest tours to jeep tours to, you know, just almost anything you can imagine, down there. And so we did some of that, and then we went to do more of these off the beaten path sort of tourist things as well.
How much bang do you get for your buck there?
Well, I think that's the great thing about Costa Rica, and I think a lot of people are going to be interested in going down there, especially since Alaska Airlines has just started flying to two destinations down there, to Liberia and to the capital, San Jose. So it's going to be really accessible to Alaskans, so I think that is part of the appeal of if people are coming to my talk just to hear that. I'll be giving sort of a travelogue bit about that. The bang for the buck is it's not a cheap country, so it's not someplace that you would go if you are really wanting to pinch pennies, but it has the appeal of someplace like Hawaii, but I would say it's about half as expensive as Hawaii. So you can actually stay in a hotel right on the beach, and it'll be maybe $100 a night as opposed to $300 a night or $200 a night. So you go to a typical restaurant, and for us Alaskans, you know, it seems like it's a great deal for what you get. But it's not, we're not talking dirt cheap. We're not talking sort of dollars for things. You know, they have a really good system of taxation and benefits, you know, so people really work for a living and they get paid for that. And they have universal health care down there. They have universal public education. And so it's a real country with a real economy, and you pay kind of real prices for things.
You and your wife had an additional traveler with you. What's it like having a young person?
Well, on this particular trip, Carson wasn't with me. But the whole time I was down there, I thought this would be just a fantastic place to bring my son, and that he would really enjoy it, especially, you know, looking up in the trees and seeing monkeys, or having monkeys come down out of the trees and try and steal your wallet. Would just be really fantastic. Or at one hotel we stayed at, there was sort of a resident iguana that would run around and, you know, just kind of unfettered. And I was just thinking he would just love that. So I think if anybody's traveling with young people, Costa Rica is great. You know, it's a safe country. It's a really well put together country. They have pretty good infrastructure in terms of roads and getting around. And, so I think it would be great.
Do you get into the politics of the area, like China building another canal?
Yeah, so that's interesting that you say China, because China is actually helping to build some of the infrastructure in Costa Rica. They're helping to build some of the highways down there. We did get into some of the politics, and I'm going to mention some of that tonight. Costa Rica is a non-military country. It's one of the Jim and I were just talking about whether it's the only non-militarized country in South America, and I believe it is. They did away with their military in 1949. They said, we're going to use that money to pay for education, not for military. So the politics of Costa Rica are really interesting. It's one of the longest lasting democracies in Latin America. They have been a democracy since 1948. And it's a very stable democracy, partially because they don't have a military, to sort of meddle in their politics, as it were. So politically, it's a very interesting country. They, as I mentioned, they have universal health care. They have a universal education to the 11th grade and a pretty good university system. So they do have a lot of social programs that take care of people. It's not nirvana. It's not, you know, they haven't figured everything out, but I think, they're doing a lot better than a lot of other countries are.
Scott Carley, your presentation starts tonight downstairs in the KTOO building, the F360 studios at 5:00, and it's put on by the Junior World Affairs Council. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Oh, well, I just think this is going to be an interesting program for everybody to come. As I mentioned, it's going to be kind of one part travelogue and one part sort of a quick description of the research that I did down there. So it'll have an appeal to people who are interested in indigenous issues, or if people just want to come and see some pretty pictures of Costa Rica.
And it's not sponsored tonight by Alaska Airlines.
It's not, but I will plug them because they are flying down there.
All right. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Thank you, Jeff. And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 17th of November, 2016. It was on this day in 1800, Congress met in the Capitol building in Washington for the first time. The Capitol was still incomplete, but it was finished enough to accommodate the Senate and the House, the Supreme Court, and the Library of Congress. There was a heavy snow that fell that day in 1800, so the parade had to be canceled, and it took the congressmen a long time trying to get into their offices. There was a problem with leakage in the building, and there was no heat. Washington was somewhat of a primitive city at the time. One senator from New York said Washington needed only houses, cellars, kitchens, well-informed men, amiable women, and other little trifles of this kind to make it perfect. In those early days, the Capitol also served as a church on the weekends, starting in 1801, services every Sunday in the House chamber. That practice continued until after the Civil War. They finished the Capitol building just in time for it to be burned by the British in 1814 during the War of 1812. It's the birthday of the novelist and historian Shelby Foote, born Greenville, Mississippi, 1916, went off to the University of North Carolina, dropped out of college, spent a few years as a captain in the Army, where finally he was kicked out for challenging authority. Worked for a while for the AP, wrote several novels, didn't sell many copies, but he got decent reviews. One of them, entitled Shiloh, came out in 1952, a story of the battle and the Civil War from the perspective of many soldiers, both North and South. It was read by the president of Random House, who liked it and wrote to Foote, asked if he would write a short history of the Civil War. He offered Foote a $400 advance for a 200,000-word book. Foote expected it would take him about 18 months to write it, and 20 years later, he finished it, a three-volume history of the Civil War, a narrative. Shelby Foote said, "In response to the complaints that it took me five times longer to write the war than the participants took to fight it, I would point out that there were a good many more of them than there was of me." And then, too, there was the fact that he wrote the book with a dip pen. He said, "The very notion of a word processor horrifies me." Here's a poem for today by William Blake, "The Divine Image." To mercy, pity, peace, and love, all pray in their distress, and to these virtues of delight return their thankfulness. For mercy, pity, peace, and love is God our Father dear, and mercy, pity, peace, and love is man, his child, and care. For mercy has a human heart, pity a human face, and love the human form divine, and peace the human dress. Then every man of every clime that prays in his distress prays to the human form divine, love, mercy, pity, peace. And all must love the human form, in heathen, Turk, or Jew, where mercy, love, and pity dwell, their God is dwelling too. A poem by William Blake, "The Divine Image." That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Staples, with technology products, copy and print, shipping, and other solutions for businesses of any size. Learn more at Staples and Staples.com. Staples, make more happen. And by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center. Now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Fall schedules are now available online at juno.org/park/diamond park. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
It's 31 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned to Juno Afternoon. In the studio with me now are Paul Sumdum and Rena Sims here to talk about St. Vincent de Paul's Thanksgiving baskets.
Thanks, Juno, for all that you've done in the past year and for the successful year we had last year. We just want to invite anybody that needs to have a basket to please call St. Vincent de Paul at
789-5535. If you have any donations, you can drop them off at 8617 Till Street, or you can go online and do svdpjuno.org.
And we'd like to thank a whole list of people. We've had Mr. McDowell.
David McDowell, we want to bless you. We want to thank Myra. We want to thank St. Paul. We want to thank every individual that has come in with turkeys, the little children, and pies and cranberry sauce. And we're hoping you'll be there for us this year, too. As it stands right now, we have 500 families that are in need of donations and food for Thanksgiving.
And there's, the kids from the Mormon Church for helping us distribute last year. We have the Moose, the Elks, and the Eagles have all donated. We want to thank you folks also for your mighty sharing and giving to the community.
Putting the baskets together. We want to thank Alaska Marine Lines. We want to thank
Alaska Housing.
Alaska Housing, for sure, for allowing us to have it there. We want to thank AA Movers for helping us gather up. That's a massive amount of food and stuff that when we finally get it together, that comes in, and then the individuals that bring it in, and for all the drivers that come and drop off to the homeless and those that are shut in and like that, those that don't have to take buses. This year's Thanksgiving, we still are in need of turkeys and pies and cranberry sauce and corn and green beans and mashed potatoes and butter and
gravy.
Milk and gravy and whatever you have at your table, they would love to have at their table. So
you don't, you can deliver cookie turkeys themselves, or you can also deliver cash or mail cash and send it online.
Yes, we would love that. Again, it's svdjuno.org, and the address is 8617 Till Street. The telephone number is 789-5535. If you want to mail it to us, do it online, drop off the turkeys. We are short, very much so, of the cranberry sauce, the milk. We have no bread at this particular time. But whatever you can give, Myra's signature is pineapple, so there we go again.
Oh, also, you can pick up your baskets on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday from 12 to 5. We'll be at Riverside Housing Development right on Postal Way, right behind the post office in Mendenhall, and we'll be there from 12 to 5.
Yes.
All right, Paula Sumdum and Rena Sims, thank you for coming down.
Thank you, Juno. We appreciate that. Thank you, Juno. Thank you.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Next guest in the studio, Katie. Your microphone on, Katie Blagden and Nikki Love. Thank you for coming down the station. You're here to talk about AEYC.
Yes, that's right. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So we're here because we have a partnership for families and children. We're part of that, and there are so many activities and events happening for families with young kids. We want to make sure that people know about it. This week, there is a really exciting event coming up. It's a preschool family night. It will be at the New Valley Library this Thursday.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's going to be from 5:30 to 7 this Thursday. And the theme this week is Whimsy of Weather, which is perfect timing with all of this different weather that we're having right now. So we're actually having somebody from a weather person from the NOAA Weather Service come in and bring some cool show-and-tell things and talk a little bit about the changing weather patterns here in Southeast Alaska. And there will be free books and a craft and a light supper. So,
and this is for kids ages 3 to 5?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And like I was saying about the partnerships, there are agencies that we partner with, like the library. They also do a family night for all-age children at the downtown library. Their next one is on December 3rd. Their theme is about how animals get ready for winter, and that'll be with Kristen Romanoff. So, you know, just a lot of things happening in town. If you want to find out more about this, there is a website called junofamilies.org, and a monthly bulletin is put out and posted on the website that lists all of these activities and more. So our partners range from the Aware Shelter, Bartlett Beginnings, the Juno Family Health and Birth Center, and we also have listings for like family turf nights at the Turf Field Gym out in the valley, as well as the Lapsit Story Times at the libraries, and even it's a Hike It Baby group that is on Facebook. You can find them there, but they are out there getting their kids, you know, into the wilderness and exploring and walking around.
And I noticed, in addition to the kid activities happening on Preschool Family Night, there's a session for adults.
There is, this Thursday also, at the AEYC office, which is in the Juno Empire building. We are hosting what's called a Business of Caring. So we know that there is a big need for child care in town. And the third Thursday of every month, we host a meeting that's really informal and casual and friendly. And people are welcome to come in, ask us about how to become a provider, whether that's in their own home or maybe they want to get into the field and work at a child care center. So we tell them all about the resources available and the supports. We offer training. We help connect them with other agencies that actually do the licensing regulations and things like that.
When people call your office, what's the first question most of them have?
It really varies from, we have a lot of activities like these ones that we're talking about. A lot of people call asking and looking for childcare. A lot of people, we have a lot of contact with childcare providers, so we provide a lot of trainings for childcare providers and educators in the community. So it really varies. It's hard to just put your finger on just one thing, but because we have a whole variety, we work a lot with families, educators, and just different people in the community. So I don't know if I can put my finger on one in particular.
If it has to do with early childhood, they're calling us.
Yeah.
And hopefully we have an answer.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully you can help them.
Whimsy of Weather, this Thursday from 5:30 until 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. at the New Valley Library. Nikki and Katie, thank you very much for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I want to say that this is a family night that happens every third Thursday of the month. So this month is the Whimsy of Weather, but stay tuned for next month, which will be on forestry. And you can find out more and get this bulletin if you sign up for the Imagination Library. And you can get in contact with us at AEYC at 789-1235. So.
All right. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. As you step outside in late fall for a breath of fresh air, the searing cry of a red-tailed hawk pierces the air. The distinctive scream is coming from a tree nearby, but when we scan the tree for the bulky form of a large hawk, we see only a small black bird. It tips its head back, opens its bill, and we've been fooled. It's a starling giving voice to the hawk's cry. In fact, the European starling, the continent's most abundant non-native bird, is an accomplished mimic. Starlings are especially astute imitators of bird sounds that have a whistled feel, like this sound of a killdeer. And this quail. European starlings regularly incorporate both into bouts of singing. They can duplicate a car alarm or a phone ring, too. What adaptive benefit might starlings gain from copying the sounds of other birds? A leading view argues that by mimicking, a male starling adds to its song repertoire, making him just that much more attractive to the females than the next male on the branch. So, the next time you hear a red tail scream, double-check its author, especially if there are starlings nearby. For BirdNut, I'm Michael Stein.
Come celebrate Juno's Trails with Trailmix at our annual dinner and auction, November 21st, 6 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Proceeds from this event will go towards installing bridges on the Treadwell Ditch Trail next year, as well as many other trail projects here in Juneau. Tickets available online at junotrails.org, at the Jack, Hearthside Books, and Rainy Retreat Books. Join us on November 21st and show your love of trails. This message brought to you by Trailmix Incorporated.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. It's about 16 minutes before the hour. Jeff Brown here today, and my next guest is Shar Bame. She's here to talk about salt cave therapy. Shar, thanks for coming down to the station today.
You're welcome.
So you've opened up a new business in town that is the first salt cave in Alaska.
That's correct.
What is a salt cave?
Well, a salt cave is where you can come, and you can expect to improve your breathing. You'll get healing benefits with salt therapy, which is we have a halo generator that we grind and pump salt into the room. And so while you're relaxing in these zero-gravity chairs and you would breathe salt, and breathing the Himalayan salt is antifungal, antibacterial. It has 84 minerals. It's going to help strengthen your immune system. If you're dealing with any respiratory issues, it'll help with that. It helps with SADS. Kids with ADD, depression, helps detox and build your immune system.
Is this a special kind of salt?
Himalayan salt. It comes from the Himalayan mountains.
The picture I saw, it had looking like big bars of salt, blocks of salt.
Yes, it is mined out of the Himalayan mountains, and then, of course, it is ground for cooking salt, or it is cut into slabs, which is what we built our salt cave out of.
What's the process of, you walk in there, and what happens next?
Yes, you come in. And you just wear comfortable clothes and you come in and relax. It's a 1 hour session. There is salt on the floor. So it kind of gives you that beach feeling. And we turn on the halo generator. You're breathing the salt and relaxing for 1 hour. And then, like I said, it helps improve your breathing. And if you have any respiratory problems going on, it helps with that. Allergies, asthma.
Allergies.
Allergies, yes.
What's an allergy?
Allergy, if you, because remember, Himalayan salt is antifungal, antibacterial, so if you've got anything going on in your respiratory, it's going to, after breathing for 1 hour, it's going to help clear that up, take care of that.
How did you discover salt therapy?
Well, it has been around for many, many years over in Europe. It has now finally just come to the U.S. just the last 2 to 3 years. When I first started building mine, which was in February, there was only 14 of them. And now we've got over 40 of them. And this one here is the first one in Alaska.
You've got over 40 in the United States or in the world?
No, in the U.S. I mean, they're popping up everywhere. They're saying in 5 years, every city will have one.
And you've got the first one in Alaska.
I do, yes.
How did you discover it?
I just happened to be in down south. I visited one in Las Vegas. And after one visit, it was amazing. I knew we had to do it. So on the plane ride home, my husband and I, we decided that we're going to bring one to Juno. And it's been great. Juno has been very welcoming. I've been able to see a lot of people clear up a lot of issues that they've been dealing with.
How many sessions do you have to go?
It depends what you're dealing with. I've got someone, if you have plugged sinuses, sinusitis, you will see relief the first visit. Obviously, if it's a really bad case, you're going to want to come a couple times. Anybody with pneumonia, a cold, the sooner you get in, the better. That first sign of cold, if you can come in, usually you can just wipe that off right away. Yeah.
Where are you located?
I am at 917 Glacier Avenue, and it's right across from the PFD building.
In between Songs and Cuppa.
That's correct, yes. Yes. I would like to invite everybody. We are, if people are just curious, wondering what is this Salt Cave all about, I am having a open house next Tuesday, 11 to 6. We can come in. We've got refreshments, door prizes. You can take tour of the cave. We've got demonstrations. We also do massages with the Halo generator going, and that's been very, very unpopular. We are also booking Christmas parties in the Soul Cave. We're booking birthday parties, and you can reserve a spot just to bring a group of friends and just hanging out and having fun.
And what are the rates?
The rates are per person, it's $39. On Thursdays, we have Kids Day. There's a lot of kids dealing with a lot of respiratory problems and, of course, if they're getting a cold. So Thursdays are Kids Day, kids go free, and the adults actually it's a discount of $30 on Thursdays. But if you do the group, you can reserve it for an entire hour, and then there's a flat fee and for a larger group, so it's much cheaper to do a group. And then, of course, we have sessions. You can buy 5 sessions, 10 session passes, and you can actually get it down to like $19 a session, which is pretty reasonable.
How many people can fit in the Salt Cave at one time?
Well, on Saturday, I had a group that came in, and I had 23 ladies come in, and they had a lot of fun. So, and there was still room for many more. So,
how many zero gravity chairs do you have?
Well, I don't have 23, but a lot of people, the floor is heated, and I have 4 inches of salt on the floor, and all Himalayan salt. And so a lot of people choose to just sit right on the salt. Himalayan salt is very hydrating. And plus it's in-floor heating, so a lot of people just really want to get that warmth.
Cool. Anything you'd like to add?
Come out next Tuesday. We sell a lot of gift certificates for massages. It's a great Christmas present, or just to bless somebody in your family. And we're booking Christmas parties right now and just booking birthday parties. So give us a call at 500-9001, and we can schedule you in.
Is there anybody who has a condition that Salt Cave therapy is not good for?
I have not. So far, it's been great for everyone. Pregnant people, pretty much any issue we have, Himalayan salt is excellent for it.
And this is different than the salt I put on my food.
Yes, it is much different. Yeah, the Himalayan salt naturally has 84 minerals, and it's pretty much mined right out of the Himalayan mountains. They crush it, and it goes right into a jar. There is no chemical processes to it. Your body recognizes it, so it's very, very healthy. It actually helps lower blood pressure. Your pH, it'll balance out your pH naturally. So it's a good salt to switch over to.
Do you have a website?
We do. It is glaciersaltcaves.com.
And tell everybody which phone number is and where you're located.
Yes, we are located right across from the PFD building, 917 Glacier Avenue, and phone number is 500-9001.
Sure, Pam, thank you for coming in. Anything like that I might have forgotten to ask?
No, thank you. Thank you very much for having me here today.
It's about 8 minutes before the hour right now, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Next guest in the studio is Floyd Dwayne Middle School Principal Jim Thompson, here to talk about the upcoming event, Dads and Donuts.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
Well, thank you for coming down.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So what do you mean by Dads and Donuts?
Dads and Donuts is a community outreach program that we do. We want to make sure that our parents and are connected to their school, our middle schoolers, and so they feel welcome. We've asked dads to and dads, uncles, stepdads, male mentors to come. This is our second annual that we've done Dads and Donuts, and any male that's having a positive influence on middle schoolers' lives at Floyd Dryden are welcome to come and reconnect and be connected to the school.
Tell me about Floyd Dryden.
Floyd Dryden's an amazing place. This is my second year as a principal, and what an honor it is to be the principal at the school. We have amazing kids. We have amazing students, and the staff is top-notch. They are some amazing people, and it's truly an honor to work alongside those people and to serve the kids that we do.
How many students do you have there? Amazing and non-amazing students.
We have, all of them are amazing. We have 475 students that are enrolled at Floyd Dryden, and we have roughly 31 staff members.
And what are their ages?
Ages 6 through 8, and so they're anywhere from 10 to 14 years old.
What flavor is people's most popular donut?
I like the maple bar with bacon on it. That's quite good that they sell around town. And anything with sugar, with carbs, I'm into, but also with the kids. Last year when we did it, it was our first year trying it out, and we had, such a tremendous, we had a lot of people show up, and, we had leftovers. And so we had some kids that were starting to hoard, donuts, and were going home with dozens of donuts and storing them in their lockers. And so we're gonna try to regulate that tomorrow. And keep it to under two, especially with the 7:45 and middle schooler kids and the hormones and sugar. It'll make for an interesting day. That's why my staff is amazing, that they're so supportive of reaching out to parents and getting parents involved. That some things that are not in the ordinary structure of a day, they embrace it and they say, yeah, we want our kids to be recognized. We want them to connect with their parents. And we also do a program in the spring with March with Moms, and we have moms come in as well. And so we're just making sure that our parents feel connected to their middle schoolers.
And how come moms don't get donuts?
I don't know. We try to be creative, and I actually stole this program from a middle school that I worked at down south, and my mentor principal, he did a Dads and Donuts program, and initially we had five or six dads show up, and it was really it was a tough school that needed some outreach. And for a first year last year, and having 25 males show up and supporting it, and then last year with March with Moms we had 45 moms, and so my expectation is continue to grow and grow. And and it's important that that parents and adults feel connected to their public school.
What is the Floyd Dwayne Middle School students' day like?
That's a good question. We have core subjects of science, social studies, math, and language arts. We also have an accelerated reading program, and then they have exploratories where they can do band. We have an amazing band program, orchestra, PE. Orchestra's program is excellent as well. I'm sorry, we have all of our programs are excellent.
I thought they were amazing too.
Yeah, they are. And so it's a day where they focus on the core subjects, but they also have some exploratory classes to explore their learning.
What's their social life like?
It is very much middle school. And Juno is an amazing place. I mean, it really is for kids. That was part of the attraction for us to bring my family up here, is that the kids here, there's just a real sense of peace and calm with the kids, and a sense of maturity, and but also a sense of innocence as well that I wanted my son to have. The middle school kids here are your typical middle school kids. They're into music. They're into what they're into, and you know, and it depends on the age group. That's why I love middle school, is that my day is never the same. And I can have a conversation with an eighth grader that's very mature and on an adult level. And then moments later, I'm cutting up with the sixth grade kid, and we're just laughing. And so that's why middle school is such an important place, and to have middle school people that are passionate about teaching that age group.
Sounds like it's fun.
I enjoy it. I love it. This is my 15th year in a middle school setting. I taught for eight. Maybe I'm doing my math wrong. 14. I'll do my math again here in a second. But I taught for eight, and I was a vice principal for four, and this is my second year, so that makes 14. And I've always been in the middle school. The middle school philosophy, you know, and I really kind of summarize it like this, is that this age group is an age group when they want this, the students want to explore their independence and be, feel free. But it's an important time that parents are connected with that and their independence. And so I have a saying that it's a time where our kids are trying to push away a little bit, but it's also a time for parents to hold them as close as they can.
June Thompson, thank you so much for coming by the station today and talking about dads and donuts and me.
You're very welcome.
May you have all the maple bars you can stand.
Thank you.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM.